to those looking to live outside the box of religious performance and inside the love of an awesome Father, this is The God Journey.
Wow, what a crazy week this has been. One of great joy and fun and connecting with people, and it's been extraordinary. But if we don't stop celebrating 60th birthdays around here, we're not going to get much else done. Hi, I'm Wayne Jacobson. You have found your way to The God Journey, and I want to welcome you here. A lot of response from last week's, the last podcast where I read a chapter of my new book, and I'll be talking about that in a little bit. Thought I'd share with you a minute from our time with celebrating Sarah's birthday, and for me, going back to my old stomping grounds in high school and sharing some 60th birthdays with some old college friends of mine. And it just has been a marvelous week of connecting with people. First, it was just family. Sarah and I, some of you know if you watch the Facebook page, Sarah and I were at Disneyland with our children and grandchildren and couldn't have had a better time. Now, I'm not a big fan of the Mouse's House. I'm just not. I rarely have fun at Disneyland, but I got to tell you, this was as fun a trip as trips get, in the sense that here, nine of us, one day, six, seven of us on another day, we spent a couple of days there, but on the second day, nine of us were there navigating a park together, a couple of parks together, actually, figuring out what to do, what to eat, what to whatever, and it was a day filled without one tense moment, without one disagreement, with just people working it out, finding a way to navigate together and laughing. We laughed so hard numerous times. There were people with tears in their eyes. The stories were funnier in the retelling than as they unfolded. And we just had a great time. And I come away from Sarah for her birthday just being a very special day with special memories with our children, my daughter's spouse, grandchildren, and just enjoying life together and having fun and being reminded that when relationships are good, they're very good. And when they're painful, they're very painful. We both, Sarah and I, have had some painful experiences in our wider families. And then you have moments like this where no one's fighting for anything. No one's screaming for their way. Everybody's just navigating together. And I love Paul's words about outdo one another in doing good. And it was that kind of a day together, to where at the end of it, Sarah and I just sat down and just looked at each other and said, have we ever had a better day? And I honestly, the reason I'm sharing that's not because my personal life is all that important necessarily, but I kind of sets a tone for what I began when I read you my book a couple of weeks ago, the first chapter of it anyway. Kind of sets in mind that family, when family is functional, when people care about each other, when it's not about selfish pursuits of individuals, but there becomes a collectiveness. I don't think anyone at the end of the day, I know I've talked to everybody since, no one at the end of the day feel like, well, I just gave up everything so others could have a good time. We all had a great time together. We have a great memory as a family because we could live and love and share, and life unfolds, and it was amazing. And then last weekend, some of Sarah's closest friends from our long history together came and spent a weekend with her. Some came for part of a day, some came for a whole weekend and spent at our house. And you know how I love that? I love just the reconnecting of life to life and long-term relationships and the fruit of having people in your life over a long haul. And the joy of just being together without having to accomplish anything, just being together to have conversation, to explore what God's doing in our lives and have the fun of all that. And the reason I mentioned some of that, we're getting ready to leave for England tomorrow. Sarah and I are going to be in England for a few days and then work our way up to Scotland and then be there for a few days and then back to England for another week. And we're really looking forward to the people that we'll be connecting with. Not too many familiar faces this time. Mostly, sometimes when I travel now, I've traveled enough that I'm all with people I know well and really explore. This is going to be a continued series of meeting new people, which, as you know, will be challenging for Sarah. Sarah more likes the comfort of people she knows well, but she's offered to navigate this trip with us, so we're going to find out how that works for her. But what's really happened on this trip and happened last week when I went up to Selma, my old stomping grounds, to be at school, and I left. I'll tell you this. This was interesting because I felt like there were a number of us from here, two or three of us, from this area that we're going to carpool up to Selma, so we wouldn't all have to take individual cars. And we'd talked about that, and I was going to have to leave Disneyland on Saturday morning, which we went Thursday and Friday. So Saturday we were free, and I was going to meet some people. We were going to drive up. Turns out that all three of us couldn't carpool up and back, but I was going to ride with one person on the way up, and I thought probably on the way back too. And I thought, yeah, it's just easy. I don't have anything to do in the afternoon. They're going to go earlier than I need to go, and then I don't have anything to do that morning, so I'll probably come back and maybe I'll just take my own car. And every time I thought I'd take my own car, which I don't mind doing because I like spending 3 hours with me. I don't always get that. I just felt this thing, you know, in your heart. Don't do it. Don't do it. Go ahead and do this. Go ahead and I'm just like, oh, boy, really? I've got to blow an afternoon and a morning not really knowing what we're doing. But you know what? I love when those nudges are there and you follow them and then something wonderful works out. And that's what happened. I made arrangements to go, so I drove my car up, and somebody's paying. I was going to just, you know, kill a few hours in Selma, you know, just hanging out at McDonald's or something and getting some Wi-Fi and working. And before the weekend ended, I had had someone on my heart all week long, wrote him. It's a brother that I knew 12 years ago. He was planning a new church, not in Selma, but in the Central Valley. And wanted my input on some stuff and gave him some input and then spoke a couple of times. He wanted a real relational fellowship, but it was from the beginning going the way of all the earth, going the way of a human-managed system, even though great-hearted people are going to try and do this better. And I'd spoken a couple of times. I said, no, 5-6 years ago, I got a letter from him that was pretty, just kind of offended by stuff on the website. I was having a conversation earlier in the day with somebody the week before I was going up to Selma, and he came to mind. And I got back to the office later. He came to mind because of a part of a conversation we had had, and I was relating that conversation. And then I got home, and he just kept being on my heart, just kept hanging there. I just kept thinking of him. So I do what I always do when that happens. I just wrote him a note, just said, hey, I haven't thought about you in a long time, but you're just on my heart all day today. Thought I would just check in and see if you're doing all right, and said, no, our relationship last email was a little rough exchange and don't know where we're standing. Don't know if this is a blessing to you or not, but thought I'd follow through anyway. And he wrote me back immediately and just said, we're going through some transition here. And we were talking about, we just love to sit down and talk with you. And maybe we could look for a time in the next couple of months to come down your way. And would you give us some time? And I said, well, as things happen, I'm going to be in your area with about 4 hours to kill on Saturday afternoon. Any chance you're free? And he wrote back and said, we'll take it. And he and his wife came and met me at a restaurant, and we sat and talked for 4 hours. I mean, just God's timing couldn't have been more incredible. And then in the course of that day unfolding, I was invited to speak at a group on Sunday morning because I was in the area. So I agreed to do that. So both the afternoon and morning got filled. The night connecting with high school folks was amazing. I rode up with a couple, you know, a former cheerleader, reconnected on Facebook, all the things you're not supposed to do, but went up with her. And on the way up with her and her husband, she's suggesting I come back with one of the other gals from our class who had driven up alone, or had driven up with her son, but was leaving her son there, was driving back alone, or brother, or something. I forget exactly how it worked out. And maybe I want to ride with her. She's going through a tough time in her life. And so I ended up coming back with her. I'm thinking on the way home, this is, and I checked it all out with Sarah before I did it. You know, this is the one thing you're not supposed to do. Connect with old high school people on Facebook and then get alone in a car with them for a while. But I just had the best time reconnecting with her and talking about some of the things in her journey and sharing the life of Jesus together with someone on a fresh page of hunger. And man, if I hadn't had the nudges, hadn't followed the nudges, I could have driven my own car up and back, gone to the 60th birthday party, and that would have been the weekend. But I tell you, it was so much better than that, just following those nudges. And now we've had this thing about going to England. And it's been the hardest trip I've ever tried to kind of bring together. The last part of it's been clear from the beginning. People invited us, wanted us to come, and it's a group in an interesting moment of transition, part of a larger thing in the world that's kind of, people are kind of seeing through it. Some are leaving it, some are still in it, and they just wanted a conversation about what do we need to see at this point. I've read He Loves Me, read So You Want Church Anymore, listen to Transitions, and could you come just spend some time with us and hang out? And so, yeah, I felt like we'd do that next spring. I told you I was mostly going to stay home this fall, get some work done on this book. And they were just a couple that was really key to this whole invitation. We're saying, you know, we're going to be gone to China in January, so if you could come before the end of the year, that'd be great. And we had this very narrow window. And so Sarah said, yeah, let's go. So the back end week was set. The other stuff was kind of would be open. We're going to make a run up to Scotland for some personal reasons. And then just, you know, put it out there to see who would meet. And nothing really came together with, you know, a group of folks saying, could you come hang out with us? But a lot of individuals just said, hey, we'd love to see if we could work it out. And so the first week of this trip is really us just hanging out with very small twos and threes and fours and fives. And honestly, I couldn't be more excited about it. I've noticed this. Some of the larger group, you know, I love conversations. I do when I travel. I don't like, you know, doing a seminar, although I do a few of that. And I'm going to do one similar kind of thing like that in Dallas coming up at the first weekend of November. But that's going to be a little more, I mean, it's going to be interactive anyway because that's what I do. But I really have come to enjoy conversations. And honestly, the greatest fruit of my life, I'm seeing now exactly what I've read in the Gospels for years. It's not when Jesus teaches large crowds that the best stuff happens. It's when he's sitting down with a woman at a well or Zacchaeus or whatever. And my life has gone that direction, completely unmotivated by me, I think. But I've been in some larger conversations lately that have had a lot of cross agendas and cross purposes, and it's been more awkward to kind of get through it. And, you know, I found the most fruitful moments are just sitting down in twos and threes, fours and fives, where it's not a meeting discussing issues and people processing those kinds of things. It's really people just sharing their life and sharing his life and finding out our story connects with his story. And I got to tell you, the first week of this trip is going to be that. And then even the last weekend, we've got a couple of larger group come y'all come kind of events to share with people. But then even the last 3 days of that week are going to be more in smaller group encounters where you really get down to it. I understand why Jesus said, where two of three of you get together in my name, then I'm going to be with you. I wish he would have said, maybe he really meant if two or three of you and only two or three of you get together. And I don't think that's true. I've had some wonderful moments in larger group settings. But the more fruitful times, sitting on my patio talking to two or three people who have come up for the weekend or come over for the day or meeting somebody at a restaurant, having a conversation for an hour or two. Those are the places that seem then not to just unpack issues, but get to a deeper story. So that's what we're going to be doing coming up. I'm real excited about it. I know I can't go all over the world. I get a lot of invitations. My wife and I want anybody else in the area. Maybe you could just come and be with us for a weekend. I'm going, yeah, I don't know how I'm going to navigate all that. Just way too many invitations to make that happen. But where God sends, I guess that's what we'll do. We'll find out how we go from there. Love the conversation for the most part on the blog. After the last podcast, we talked about the first chapter of my new book, talking about community, how we find our way into that life, and a lot of responses. And some, you know, I want to respond to. Some were personal emails to me. Others were part of the blog and a larger conversation. Lots of good stuff. There are 81 posts right now, but 82 last time I checked. And I just want to read and react to some of the stuff that was there because I think it'll be important for us to kind of engage that. Don on the blog said this, from experience, it's impossible to have friendships of any kind or close relationships with people who have a whole different belief system. You want to because you want to be loving, but you can't. Believe me, I've tried. When Jesus opened my eyes to grace, the truth, the natural separation happened between my family and I. It's hard to give all yourself and have a close relationship with someone who doesn't walk in the truth as you do. You may try to force it, but there will always be a separation. Now, I'm not saying you can't talk to that person, but it's impossible to have a close relationship. I talk and laugh with people every day who aren't in truth, but it's impossible for me to give all of myself to them and be close. Grace and law doesn't mix. Light and darkness can't mix. And if I could just comment on that a bit, Donna, and for others who read that, I get the larger point she's making. There's not a depth of fellowship between people who see things very differently, particularly if one of them in the conversation is going to be argumentative about it. But I would just say the potential to really love people where they are in their journey and have a close relationship with them, in spite of the fact that there's some major things you see differently, man, I think that can happen all over the planet. As long as the other person in the conversation isn't a bully, isn't trying to force you into their way of thinking. If you can just talk and say, man, I understand you see it that way. I see it a little differently. And this is what I'm thinking these days. And then love each other beyond the agreement of truth. And I think Jesus had a marvelous capacity to do that. Sarah and I have found our way into that. One of our closest friendships for the last few years is with a Mormon couple and leadership in the Mormon church. And no, we don't buy into their doctrine. We don't buy into that system much more than we buy into any other systems. But I'm telling you, the depth of friendship and caring and what we do get to talk about that opens eyes to who God is, I found it to be fun. Now, I think maybe what Donna may be dealing with in family, those things are a little more complicated, particularly if family thinks you're moving off into error and they feel like it's their job to fix you. Then that kind of thing happens. We actually had a little taste of it on the blog, as a matter of fact. Someone kept writing in, and their whole point was, you've got to stay in your local fellowship. Doesn't matter how bad you've been hurt. Once you get out of that family, you're going to be lost. And you've got to go back to that family no matter what happens. And that family's where God's family is. And I mean, it's someone who has a limited view of the church in the sense that the church is only the official things that call themselves church. And part of what my book's going to explore is the church is a reality in the world that is greater and more transcendent than any human managed institution can provide. And the church is the reality of those relationships as they connect, whether it's for a moment or for a lifetime, whether it's for a task together or just to love each other. There's a reality that is the church in the world that we get to plug into. And when somebody doesn't see that, when somebody's point of view is it's only those things and you left it, you're wrong, you need to get back. And if you think something's wrong there, you've got to make it better. And I don't mind people sharing that point of view. We let her share that point of view. But then it got to be every other post trying to convince people, no matter what anybody said, she was not part of a conversation. And I did what I've only done twice before. In the whole time I've been doing the God journey, I asked her to stop posting. And when she ignored me, I finally just started deleting her posts. Why? Because she wasn't saying anything different. It was the same point of view, and she was going to dominate the conversation because now everybody, because I mean, I love this about the God Journey crowd for the most part. You're trying to love her into seeing something broader, something bigger, but she's not listening. And now she's going to hijack the whole conversation for her bully pulpit. And we lost the forum once that way, and I'm not going to lose the blog that way. So when people decide, I've now got an audience of people I need to convince they're wrong, and I'm right, and then we're going to, people on the blog are going to join that. That's kind of, it's just, it kills me because I see that is so destructive to fellowship. Both the person who's bullying the venue, and we've all been in meetings where people bully it. It may even be those who officially are sanctioned to bully it, but their point of view is the only one that matters, and no one else gets to talk, and when they do, they get discounted. And I just, oh boy. And I tell you, the best way to handle that, if you can really learn, whether it's, I mean, your own home or in a meeting like that, you've got to manage it a little more. But on blogs and forums and things on Facebook, and I tell you, the best thing to do is when somebody comes clear out of left field with that strong, you got to do it my way or you're wrong attitude, knock back a little bit. You know, love them. Just say, hey, you know what? That's what I like to do. I like to say, you know what? I appreciate what you're saying there, but, you know, the other people seeing beyond that, and hopefully you can be open to that a little bit. If they come back with another argument, like, I'm not even listening to you, you're wrong, I'm right, shut up. You know, the best thing to do on a forum, the best thing to do is stop engaging them. Just go on and have the conversation you're already having with other people who are actually trying to learn and grow and explore together. There's a phrase on the internet, and it's kind of cruel. I realize that. It's a kind of a cruel phrase. I don't mean it exactly to apply in this situation, but it's a bit of wisdom. It says, don't try to win over the haters. You're not the jackass whisperer. I said it was crude. And I wouldn't characterize this person as a hater at all. I just think she's someone who couldn't see what some of you have already seen. And she represents a voice that many of you kind of already hear haunting your head often, that I should go back and I should make the best of it and I should. And God's invited you to a greater place of freedom. But the nagging voices of religion are always to draw you back into something. And then you're going to try and engage it. Because if you can get them to see what you see, maybe that helps you feel more whole because you've won their agreement. Let me just tell you, none of us have the gift to win someone who's not listening. None of us have a gift to convince someone who doesn't want to be convinced, isn't looking to be convinced. So I think it's best if you just kind of, and I think that's best in our own relationship. I don't spend at this point in my life. I used to spend a lot of time when I was pastoring with people who weren't happy about this. It was a problem with that, trying to fix this. And I'm trying to win people all the time into what's going on. In the last 20 years, I've not done that at all. I get to spend my time with hungry people. I get to spend my time with people who want to have a conversation, who want to listen, who want to process. They may not agree with me at the end of the day. They may not like where I'm at. I may not like where they're at. But you know what? Love's stronger than the need to convince. And now you can have a relationship beyond our places of agreement. And that's just great stuff. But then when people, I mean, I'll try once with somebody. Somebody's coming at me, Wayne, I really disagree with their thing. Let me just tell you where I'm coming from. And then, does that make sense to you? Okay, now tell me where you're coming from. And I'll say, okay, great. Now, let's just leave it to the Holy Spirit to convince you or me or both. Because getting in an argument, you know what? Life's too short. I love having fellowship with people, which isn't about arguing. It's not about my view versus your view. It's not who's more right, who's listening to Jesus better. It really is walking in the light you have. I want to walk in that light, and I don't need you around, you know, trying to beat it out of me. One, you're not going to convince me. I've landed in a place I love, Sarah and I. The reality of our life in Jesus, the reality of our connections with people, I have no doubt that we have found a better expression of church living like we live in the world than we ever did when we went to something that called itself the church. So I'm not sitting here going, yeah, I'm thinking about going back. This isn't working out really well. Enough. You just say the right thing. You'll win me. Man, I have found life. I have found something, a way of relating in the world that fulfills everything Scripture talks about church. And yeah, there's room in it for pastors and teachers and all that, but not the way our human systems have defined those. And that'll become more clear as the book unfolds. But finding that community is not something we need to do. And I heard some of that. This is from Trisha on the blog. Broke my heart. I've given up trying to find real community. I do not think the people you describe here exist. I live my life 100% on my own, except for my work. Nope, I've decided it does not exist. Wow, Trisha. I hear the hurt there. I hear the disappointments. I've tried it. I've tried to find it. I've been to places. They all turn out to be the same thing. I'm just going to withdraw to me and myself, and I'm going to make it work that way. And boy, if that's what you've got to do right now, I'm not even going to try and convince you otherwise. Then do that. But just because you haven't seen it, doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Now, you watch. I'm probably setting myself up here to get really slaughtered when I'm in London. Sarah and I have been to England three or four times. We've been rained on a couple of times, and we've been in England. Our experience in England is it's got some of the best weather on the planet. I mean, it's sunny. One time we were there, it was hot. It was so hot. We almost cooked in the summer. Sun was out. We were begging for some fog. My experience in England is the weather is better than any other place I've ever been. Now, I know enough to know that my experience isn't all there is. I mean, there's all kinds of statistics and weather records and other people's testimonies that says, you know, weather in London can be frightfully cold and chilly, and that's probably what we'll get this entire trip. But no, that's not our experience. And if I discount other people's experience based on mine, then my world becomes more limited. Here's the problem with limiting our world. We don't know where we limit it. We make choices maybe like, I don't think it's in a community. I'm not looking for it anymore. And we do that to protect ourselves against the disappointment that I may not find it. That doesn't mean it isn't there. It doesn't mean those kind of people who live selflessly, who are learning to engage God and love others without agenda, those people do exist in the world. I've met them all over the world. And I what I appreciate about this, though, I think finding community comes when you give up trying to find it. I mean, I get that email all the time. I need a home group in my area. Can you find me a group of people that do this? I want somebody building it, or I'm going to have it in my home. We're going to try and build community together. It doesn't work that way. Community happens because here's the process I think unfolds. Number one, Jesus engages me in a way that begins to untwist what sin twisted in me and what religion twisted even worse. I get to live inside that reality. It may take years. It may take a decade or two. I get to do that for a week. As I'm learning to live inside of who He is, and I'm learning to live in my world without the self-preference of sinful heart, which is completely relationally challenged. You even go looking for a community because of what you need out of it will guarantee that you won't find it. You might find some group that tries for a time. But it is that self-centered existence that kept me from it for so long. I'm trying to find it for me. I'm trying to find it for what I want. I'm trying to find it so I can write a book and tell other people. It's hard to find if you're looking for an it. If you're learning to live loved, and then as you get some space in your life to live loved in Father's love, not have to be so, have the coping mechanisms and all the things I use to manage my life and my fear and my doubt, as that loosens up a bit, I have room for people. I have room to care, to know, to call, to have someone come to mind, to respond to the nudge, to make space in my life for a connection that's more real, more vibrant. As you make that connection, then another connection comes, another season, another time. And I think what I miss on the blog so much is community is the fruit of something. It's not something to go find. You can't create it. You can't manage it. You can't hunt it down. You can live differently in the world. You can let love transform your heart and then learn to live loving towards others. Somewhere in that process, you'll find some people love you back. Love you without agenda. Love without trying to get something out of you. Love without a need to use you. When you find people who love you back, that's community. It's that simple. If I'm trying to get them to love me, that's a recipe for disaster. And people do end up disappointed and hurt. And I've gone to lots of home group things, and there's so many organic, tangible kingdom. We're going to build this. We just got to get it right. Here's what we've got to do. It all comes back to human effort. And in the human effort of it all, what happens is we create something in our own image. And it's everybody in it is managing the relationships for their own good. I've just finished reading This Town, the most disappointing book I've ever read about politics in Washington. Everybody is in on it, from media to politics to lobbyists. They've created a plutocracy in the core of our nation that lives off the government and the power and money. It's the richest place in the world where all these lobbyists and millions of dollars and everybody's using everybody else to get ahead in their relationships. And then when you no longer serve them, they cut you off and move on. And I tell you, I've been in church relationships, quote unquote church relationships, just like that. Use you. The people that came out of the woodwork that were suddenly my friend when the shack was popular, and also just happened to have a manuscript, and people that were all, because they really thought I could move their ministry to a more visible platform if they could hang around near me. And I tell you, it made me sick. There wasn't anything about it I enjoyed. The real relationships I have didn't come from there. But it's easy in our need and our desires for ministry even, or even community, to use people in the name of loving them or wanting to be loved. And I don't encourage you. There's some amazing ways that people connect and relate. Yeah, it's slow. Yes, people are looking for something else. I'm not telling you this is a great road to go down if you're in a hurry to grab community for yourself. I'm just saying if you learn to live in that space, good things happen. Shirley wrote this on the blog. I understand the feelings of those who feel no opportunity for community. Wayne was already a gifted person who has many unique opportunities. Most of us do not have those avenues of connection. My grandchildren attend the assembly we left, and that leaves us feeling left out. When I realized, though, that most of those assembly relationships were just superficial acknowledgments in the vestibule, I understand, but I still feel a loss. Again, I wonder what it would be like if we did not see our faith in terms of a building and more as fellow believers involved in our communities and relationships without agenda. Well, Shirley, you nail it there. What would it be like? What if we'd spent the last 2,000 years not building all these institutions and buildings, but actually learning what it means to love each other without agenda? But I'll say this. I know my life is pretty visible. I know I have opportunities for connection other people don't have. The books give me that. The website visibility gives me that. The podcast gives me that. But Shirley, I want you to know, and I want other people to hear this too, I meet people all over the world who live the way I'm talking about with you who don't have the same platforms and visibility I have. So I'm not just sharing you something that gifted people with great connections get. And most of my best relationships, I tell you, some of my best ones, I don't think they've been on my website for the last 4 or 5 years. They know me as a person. They're really not caring about all that other stuff. And when I sit down and talk to them, we don't talk about my ministry and we don't talk about books I'm writing. I may share something because I'm excited about it, but they're not in it going, hey, what project you got going next? Any of that stuff. We're talking about us. We're talking about what's going on in them and me. And we're people who live and work and breathe and struggle and doubt and laugh and cry and hurt and rejoice. And that's the conversation out of which community rises. And so I don't want people to feel like, well, Wayne can talk about it because no one else gets to. You know what? I meet tons of people all over the world who get to, who celebrate the twos and threes, the relationships. I had some people say, I don't have a community at all. And then I'll hear them later talk about these friends they have. They get together for breakfast or lunch. And I'm going, why is that not community? Because it doesn't gather under a name on a regular night. Why isn't? Because I think if you have two or three friendships that are real and wonderful, that's amazing. And if you have 10 or 12, that's outrageous. That's extravagant. Enjoy it. But don't despise the relationships you have, or don't feel like you have to be. I'll be honest with you, Shirley, if my grandchildren were in a deal and part of the activities of that deal, I'd be there once in a while just to celebrate it with my kids and my grandkids. Wouldn't be a card-carrying member, wouldn't sign on the dotted line for membership, but you know what? As God would give me grace, and I realize when you first break away from something that's incredibly guilt-ridden, performance-driven, captivating, you need some space so that doesn't tempt you again or doesn't weigh you down. But there's freedom that comes over time when I can be right back in those same environments. And you know what? I don't feel the guilt anymore. I hear it. I see it going on, but it means nothing to me. I'm not there for that. I'm there for the people I care about. And some people on this journey do find community inside relationships with people who are more part of a Sunday morning event. Now, oftentimes those people are so busy, they don't have any time for community. I think that's true. The relationships are often task-based, or like you said, they're perfunctory greeting out in the lobby. Yes, that's often true. But again, you can't relate to 100 people or 400 people. Where's the 2 or 3, 4, 5, 6 that God's related me to that I could invite over for a lunch and have a wonderful conversation together? It's out of that thing that community happens. It's not let's go find a community. It's let's let them happen. Ron wrote this: the relationships that are task structured will eventually dissolve when there is no task to maintain it. A lot of institutional relationships are that way, and we've talked about that before here. It's very much true. It talks about having that with a sister, but you know it's only because they're brother and sister, and if they weren't on a task, they wouldn't do it. What I love about my family right now, we're not on any task together, except the task is to love and care about each other. And we do, and we have a lot of fun together, and we can goof around and laugh our heads off, and we can cry when someone's going through a rough time. But then Ron asked this question: do all relationships need to last a lifetime? Maybe there's a handful of people we can say are lifelong friends. Others come and go, and we are better for them having spent part of their journey with us. Can we build friendships knowing that one day the road may divide and separate us? And Ron says, I think so. And I would say a hearty amen. Absolutely you can. Yeah, I just think when you don't, the fear of I don't have enough relationships, I want to invest my time in a relationship that's going to be enduring and fruitful. I get that. I mean, I went to college that way. I told God going to college, I don't want to date women for 3 years and then finally sort one out. I'd like to invest my life in someone early on. And I prayed that God would allow me to meet someone. And Sarah and I met our freshman year. So I get that. But when you get free enough in Christ so that you don't need permanence because your security is not in the relationship, it's in Him. Then if people come through your life just for 6 months, a year, a weekend, a conversation on an airplane, enjoy it. Enjoy wherever it comes about. Enjoy friendship as it takes shape. Don't force it. The more you force it, the harder it will be to happen. Relax into God's love for you. Let people come along as you care about them. Yes, you will care for far more people than will care about you. You will. I'll be truth in advertising. I love more people than love me back. But God's called me to love everyone, so I don't have to fight that fight. And then I really enjoy when someone loves me back in the way that I love them. and we become peers, brothers and sisters who can live and love each other together. That's the best. Ruby asked this, is Jesus enough of a common ground to start a friendship or maintain one? I think so. And Ruby, I think so too. I think Jesus, even if you see Jesus very differently than I see Jesus, you know what? If we keep loving him, he'll lead us to life and grace together. And I see this when I see somebody struggling in their life. If you knew Jesus better, you maybe would see this the same way I do, or maybe I'd see it the same way you do. So if our conversation is knowing Jesus better, he'll make us one. It's not something we have to do on our own. And this from Carrie in the blog. Last time I stepped through the doors of an institution was over 3 years ago, and I was already feeling alone before I stopped as Jesus began to reach into my heart and change the way I saw him. And those around me tried to convince me I was wrong to question the church. Haven't found the community that Wayne is talking about, and sometimes I think maybe he gets it to see it more because he travels so much and is so visible to everyone with where he stands. I've already addressed that. For those of us that stay in one place, it's not easy to find. I don't know if I'll ever be able to find that family Wayne is talking about, but I've seen such huge wounds in my heart that I didn't even know were there being revealed, and then with infinite tenderness, his hands reaching to heal them. Maybe we can't be real with others until we're real with ourselves. And we can't be real with ourselves until he shows us how he sees us and we start to believe him and what he sees is really real. Carrie, that's lovely. You live that way, you will find that family. But you can stop looking for that family. Look for him. Love him. Let him heal the wounds in your heart. That'll make space for people to be in there in a way that's good for you and good for them. And in that way, community happens. It's the fruit of something. It's not something we have to make happen directly. And I think that's the mistake we've continued to make. And then I got this from an old friend. He said, I guess I'm sick of telling people I don't go to church because we are the church. Seems like a ton of pressure attached to it. I find that I'm learning about Jesus and making connections in all kinds of places. And it doesn't depend on the combination of the people involved. There's just a connection in our conversation. And I'm starting to think of that as the church. And I wrote him back and just said this. I'm going to read part of this. Leads to the conversation I want to have. I usually don't tell people that I don't go to church because I'm letting them define church in a way that is out of touch with Scripture. If they are, I might say something like this. I don't attend a congregation on Sunday morning, if that's what you're asking, but I'm deeply connected to his church in more relational ways. People can then choose to explore that more or not. I don't put down what they're doing, but I try to make space for them to see there are other ways to connect. And I do think that's part of the language I hope the book I'm working on, Finding Church, I hope what it does help people do is find a different language. And not just talk about, I left the church. Now you're letting other people define church. Or why don't you go to church anymore? And I said, man, I am connected to that church all the time. No, I don't do it in the same way you do on Sunday morning, but I'm not against what you're doing. I hope you're okay with where I'm at. And some people aren't. Some people are just, you wither up and die if you're not in an institution. And bottom line, what that teaches is Jesus can't be trusted with your life. You've got to put it in the hands of a system or a leader, an apostle, a pastor somewhere, because you can't be trusting Jesus. You're going to wither up. You're going to fall into error. And I've said this a million times before. Error never comes from simple people following Jesus. Error always comes from someone who wants to lead a group of people after themselves. And they create an error to create a following, or actually create the error in creating the following. And that's what leads to the kind of disaster. So I hope we get a better definition of church in our hearts. And I hope when people use it wrongly, then I may not mean to them. I think we want to be gracious on this side of it to say, if you mean, do I go to a Sunday morning meeting? I don't. But I have connections with people who are growing in Jesus all the time, and I love Jesus more than I ever have. And I hope you can be okay with that. That opens doors. Now, not everybody's going to be okay with that. People want to slap you in the face for talking that way. I get it. But you know what? I think we're going to have a better conversation as we can live more graciously in our spirits and graciously with people around us, because our needs are being consumed in the reality of the Father's affection for us. We get to live differently in the world. And when we live differently in the world, anything, literally, anything can happen.
For traveling with us on the God Journey, you can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com,